Welcome to Pop Parenting, Season 2, where therapist and author Avram Nadegil and myself, Ellie Bass, drink a lot of coffee and discuss family dynamics, relationships, parenting, and more each week using 2000s movies to illustrate complex situations and examples. By the way, Pop Parenting is now rated in the top 20 Jewish podcasts to watch in 2021, all thanks to you. So thank you for all of your support, feedback, and movie suggestions. Please keep them coming. And don't forget to subscribe. We're available on all podcast platforms. Okay, here we go.
Let's jump in. Welcome back, everyone.
Up in the air.
Pop Parenting.
Well, first of all, I think we have to just take a step back here and for people who are listening right now to understand the process that it took for Ellie and I to get to this film because we had to jump through some hoops to get to this film.
What are we watching?
Yeah, it can't be too scary, too sexy, too violent. It can't be too.
Right.
So by the time it gets through all of our filters, the amount of films that we can choose from gets very narrow, but
I think we landed on something very cool, and and I think it's also, look, you know, partly it wasn't just that one of the movies that we were really looking at was like too sexy or too scary. There just wasn't enough themes to talk about in there. So a movie can be a great film but not necessarily have good material that speaks to the things that we want to speak about. So I think that's also what we ran into. So we landed on, Avram actually told me about this movie. I'd seen it come up on Netflix and landed on as a good euphemism for this. It's called Up in the Air with George Clooney and Anna Kendrick, which is such an interesting casting choice, I thought.
She was great. I thought she was I never heard of her before this film, but I thought she was really funny. She played a great role. By the way, I was watching, I rewatched it last night with my wife, and she turns to me and she's like, "I think I saw this film." And I'm like, "I think I did too." And she's like, "I think we saw it together."
That's
and
weird,
we did.
Because I had the same feeling. I was like, "Have I seen part of this?" It was very odd.
We saw it in a theater, Elise and I.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's so wild.
Yeah,
that's wild. So this is a 2009 film.
Yep.
So maybe what we'll do is I'll do a quick on one foot and then let's jump in. I think it's such, it actually, the film itself is such a great premise, and it's done in this kind of almost Wes Anderson-ish, like quirky kind of way with the titles of each city, the kind of Garden State melancholy soundtrack behind it. And George Clooney plays this really lovely character, actually, that I think is so interesting, his journey. So he plays Ryan Bingham, who works for a company that fires people for a living. He basically is one of these people that companies hire, and he says in this very like sort of sardonic way, like when the boss is too chicken to fire his own staff, they hire us to come in and do mass firings when they're basically downsizing the company. So notably, this is in 2009. I'm assuming it's also addressing the 2008 recession that hit the United States when large companies were all downsizing. So there was economics, that those types of economics were hitting large swaths of people. And it was big business to go in and fire people for people. So this is a huge team. He's on the road 364 days a year. He doesn't even own his own apartment. He just rents a hotel suite somewhere in Omaha, which is the headquarters of the company. And basically his life is, he's trying to go for a goal of getting 10,000 frequent flyer miles.
It's 10
Sorry,
million.
10 million. He's aiming for 10 million frequent flyer miles, which is an unheard of thing for someone of his age to do. He spends his entire life, as he describes with quite a bit of glee, you know, my life is in airports, right? I have a carry-on bag and my three shirts and my perfectly packed suits, and I go from town to town firing people for a living. And he has a script. Yeah.
And I don't know, Ellie, did you ever see the movie Heat with Robert De Niro? Yes. And Al Pacino?
Yep.
There's a line in Heat carries on the spirit of what you're talking about having, you know, just enough in a suitcase to get up and go. Robert De Niro's character is talking about, if you're going to hold up banks, you have to be able to leave your apartment, what is it, 30 seconds flat and not look back. And so you can't tie yourself down.
You can't be attached to anything.
Right. And so there is this theme where writers of these films are touching on something, some sort of chronic anxiety in our society, that there's this wish, this dream, that we could just get up,
right,
leave it all behind at a moment's notice and start over again. I just thought it was interesting that this is the second time I've seen this theme. I'm sure there are other movies.
For sure.
Where it's playing off some sort of fantasy we have, at least North America, but just getting up and going when the going gets tough.
I also think there's, you know, it's interesting because I was recently teaching a class on the idea of enoughness, you know, that our whole material world is built on this idea that no matter what you have, you always need more. But then the question comes up, do you possess your things or do your things possess you? And so you start, the more you have, the less free you actually feel. Even though the line that you're being sold in marketing is, ooh, if you get this, you're gonna have even more freedom. And it's really the opposite, the more you have. And so Ryan, it fits in well with Ryan Bingham is starting to position himself as a aspirational, inspirational speaker. And he gives these talks called What's in Your Backpack? And basically talks about, you know, what all the things that we carry around in our backpack, like our lives and our jobs and our friends and our families. And just imagine how wonderful it would feel to just take that off and to not be connected to anything. And he basically lives a life of what Anna Kendrick's character Natalie says to him at one point, of like self-imposed exile, disconnection. And so that's his life. And so his sister is getting married. His youngest sister's getting married. You can see him sort of trying to not be part of that whole experience. And they want her to take pictures of a cardboard cutout of them, like in all these different places that he goes. And he meets this new executive that his company has brought on, who is about to change the way the company works by saying, we are no longer going to fire people in person. We are going to do it via Zoom, which is very interesting. You know, it's interesting to watch that quote unquote new technology when, you know,
especially this year.
Yeah, totally. Like everything's on Zoom. And so basically what is that saying? It means that Ryan will suddenly not be traveling all the time. And he's horrified at that thought because he really has built a life around not being connected or to anything or anyone or anywhere. On the road, he meets another woman at one of the hotel lobbies who basically describes herself as him with a vagina. Like basically she's the exact same person as he is, not connected to anything, quite glib, very cool, doesn't want to be attached. And they sort of start this, you know, on again, off again love affair, which actually evolves as it goes through. You see him actually falling for her, which is something that he never expected to do. He's like the one that, you know, Anna Kendrick as a young executive is thrown together with him because he says she has no idea how to fire people. If she can't do it in person, how on earth is she gonna understand doing it on a screen? So of course, now we get this odd couple. They're thrown together where they have to travel together and fire people in person so that she can learn the ropes. But she's a young, starry-eyed, you know, 20-year-old who's an executive just out of Cornell, I think. And she came to Omaha to work for this company because she followed a boy and basically gave up her dream job to come and work at this company. And she has these ideas that we can have better productivity and pay less money if we do everything online. So she goes out on the road with him and she says to him, there's a great conversation where basically she's saying, you mean you never want to get married? And he's like, no. And she's like deeply offended by the fact that he has zero interest in actually building a life with another person. Okay. Towards the end of the film, where does it all end up? Natalie's boyfriend dumps her by text, which I think is very ironic, you know, and it is, you know, pointed out directly that, you know, how can you say that it's fine to do these types of very personal things via a screen? And then, you know, your boyfriend doesn't even dump you in person. And Ryan develops a relationship with this woman. Spoiler alert, he eventually actually decides to go with his heart, and he goes to visit her at her house and realizes this woman is married with kids, and that their whole relationship has been predicated on untruths and escape for her. For him, clearly there was something else going on. And at the end of the movie, you sort of, Anna Kendrick quits and goes to pursue the job that she always wanted, and Ryan writes her a really beautiful reference, and he decides to take Natalie's advice and use his frequent flyer miles, number one, to send his sister and her new husband on a trip, and number two, to go figure out who he is. I think that's everything. What I missed?
Yes. No, that was good. A good standing 1 foot. So a couple of things jumped out at me that I wanted to talk with you about today. The issue of affairs is tackled in this film, infidelity, marital affairs. And I thought it would be a good use of our time just to touch on this, because I think affairs are misunderstood. And so let's see where we go with this. So one of the things that's interesting, Ellie, is that if you read about this film, there's a lot of comments about how strong the women characters were in this film. This is what I was reading online. You know, George Clooney's character is sort of like seen as, you know, neither here, neither there, narcissistic, self-centered, you know, lost puppy dog. Like, he looks like a little lost puppy dog by the end of the film. But Alex, you know, Alex, the businesswoman who's traveling around, you know, is strong and goal directed, and this. So I think that this is where theory can be so helpful. Any theory, but I'm thinking right now, family systems theory,
right,
in that once you have a good theory to understand human functioning, you can see where things go awry when you don't have a theory. And here's an example. The writers, I think, position it this way. Like, I don't think they intended anything else. So it's 2010, 2009.
Yeah.
We're way past the idea that, you know, we want a more diverse workforce. Women are an important part of the workforce, blah, 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 blah. So, like, this idea is well entrenched in our culture. It's true also at a lot of workplaces. But here's the thing. So one of the things in family systems theory is there is two ideas about maturity or a self. So the first one is that most of us portray ourselves in public as a functional self. So what does that mean? It means that who I am, my values, my principles, how I conduct myself is somewhat in relationship to you. So when I'm with my mother, I am a right. certain way. And when I'm at work, I'm a different way. And when I'm with my political friends on the left, I become more left. And when I'm my political friends on the right, I become more right. And I'm a bit of a chameleon, right? And anxiety dictates what I stand for. And to an outside looking in, Dr. Bowen used to say, people look more mature than they are. Meaning,
yeah, for sure.
So long as there's not too much anxiety, you look great.
Right.
Right. You look great. You look solid and you seem clear on what you stand for.
I think it's one of the things that I run into so much with people where they're like, how come everybody else is okay and I'm not? Right. Like, everybody just looks like they're doing fine. They know how to talk to people. They can do their job. They're like, you know, everybody looks outside of themselves and everyone looks like you said, they're functioning well.
Right. Right. Yeah. In my office, one of the themes that comes up all the time is, how come at work I feel productive, creative, connected, My relationships are strong, but I come home and it's a total mess with my kids and my spouse.
Right.
And so this has been a well-researched thing. And, you know, the general idea there is that in the office, there isn't enough emotional intensity in crucibles to create, to reveal the more immature, anxious parts of ourselves. But anyways, so that's the functional stuff. And then Dr. Bowen said, there is what we call the core self. That's the self that we leave our families with. It usually it's around the age of 19. It's really actually settled by early adolescence. Some would even say maybe earlier than that. And that means our core part of our foundational part of what we stand for, what we believe, what our values are. And you could do all the self-help books. You can go on all the retreats. You don't really get much wiggle room in terms of how much you can maneuver that. Now, I couldn't be a therapist if I didn't think you can have an impact on that, but it's not nearly as malleable as a lot of self-help books would suggest. So in this film, it's interesting because you got three main characters here. And the question is, who has the most sense of core self and who has the most functional self? And at least when you read, you know, people who talk about this film, they seem to suggest that Alex is the one who has the most sense of core self and strongest
so
direction. This is the articles I read, Ellie.
Yeah, okay.
But here's the thing. So here's how we have to talk about affairs. So this might shock our readers, what I'm going to say here. So I want to put a disclaimer. I am not suggesting that you should have an affair. So let me put this out there right now. So no one calls me and tells me you ruined my life. Affairs work. Infidelity works in the same way that heroin works. Alcohol works. Affairs work. We're not going to spend the entire time talking about affairs. But the gist of it is this. When you have two immature people in a monogamous relationship, two immature, this is the key. It's two immature, not one, two. Right. And let's just take an example. I'm just going to throw this out here, okay? Because we don't know about Alex's background. We know nothing about her family, right? It's only near the end of the film we even know she has a family.
Right.
You have a situation, let's say, where you have a young mom just had her first kid and throws all of her immaturity and anxiety and love and attention into her baby. So everything is the baby and she's getting so much fulfillment out of her mothering, okay, that her husband now is not even an appendage of the family. It's like an annoyance. Like, if you can't get me the milk, please just leave. Leave us alone in our blissful, attached union together. So you have one anxious person, mom, who is throwing herself into her motherhood, but also in an anxious way because she's getting all this unconditional love from her child.
Right.
Similarly, she's married to this anxious, immature guy who before the kid came along was getting all this attention from his partner. And now he's left wondering, what the hell? You know, I'm not having any sex. We're not talking. She doesn't give me any more compliments. I'm getting nothing. So he's walking around feeling really anxious about this. He would be susceptible, not because of sexual arousal, but because of emotional immature need to other people out in the world at work, for example, of someone giving him a compliment, someone saying you look tired, to connecting with someone else and feeling once again fulfilled by some other human being.
Right.
And when that happens, and if he does have an emotional affair or a sexual affair, this is where things are counterintuitive. It helps him in a weird way with his marriage. So he comes home and she will say, you know, he's doing better. Like he's more pleasant to be around.
Right.
And in a weird way, even though he feels guilty, he feels his wife, is nicer to be around because he doesn't need things from her. And that's why I say affairs work. It is a temporary stabilization of a major change to the system. It stabilizes the system and everything works, Ellie, until it doesn't. What do I mean by that? So long as the affair is a secret, it works great.
Mm-hmm.
So long as it's a secret. And that's why Alex is a functional self in the film. All of that strength
What's the secret aspect? What is that? Why does it have to be a secret?
Oh, because it wouldn't work otherwise. Let's, for example, when Ryan shows up at her house in the film and knocks on the door and right. she has this horrified look, he's about to reveal her BS life.
Right.
You see, her kids and her husband portray her to be, you know, a businesswoman out there making money for the family right. and loyal and coming home. It's all BS. Now, it's not all BS, right. but the point is it's a functional self she's portraying to the people that love her the most.
Right.
So when people right. talk about her character, you know, I was reading some of these articles about how strong she is. It's all what Dr. Bowen said, functional or pseudo self. It's right. not her core self. If it was, she'd come home and tell her husband, I'm into polyamorous relationships. Right. I hope you are too. So when I travel, I'm going to sleep with other guys because it's what I do. And he says, you know what? That's great because me too. Ha! Right. Look at that. We share this polyamorous philosophy and we're going right. to, you know, and the kids know it and everything's open. Okay. Right. As we say in Yiddish, Gesinterhey, good right. to you. Good
or
luck.
She would say, like, this isn't enough for me. I need something else in some way. How can we figure this out together?
Ah, no. You see, now you're getting too mature, Ellie. Now you're getting yeah. too.
But that's what I mean. Like, if she was really mature, what would that look like?
This is the conundrum that all of us with our immaturities and anxieties have, right? When you are prone to certain degrees of, and we all have this, by the way, so we're all prone to this, immaturity and anxiety, we look outside of our most important relationships for stability, right? Therapists, coaches, affairs, rabbis, priests, never with our mother, father, sibling, spouse, kids, because there's too much tension there. There's too much risk, okay? So we don't, now here, the trick with this film, Ellie, is we don't know the origin story of Alex and her husband. We don't right. know, but right. any cursory understanding of affairs, we know that clearly something's rotten in, what is it, Denmark? Is that the expression?
Right. Rotten. We see that also when she gives that phone call and she says to him, like, we both knew what this was going in, that this was just escape. And so right. clearly this is a pattern for her. She's very comfortable with it. She's decided this is what her life looks like. And she's basically built herself around that coping mechanism.
Yeah, you see, this is where I would push back on that. I don't think she's comfortable with it because she needs to keep up the pretense on, she has two men who both don't know what the hell she's thinking
right.
because she never tells George Clooney's character.
Yeah, that's right.
Right?
Yeah.
So really what she's doing is I'm going to lie to you and I'm going to lie to you so I can maintain this sense of strong. Remember, she's giving advice to what's right. her face? Anna, what's her name? Natalie.
Right, Natalie.
Yeah. Way in your mid-30s, you have this. Oh, she's so wise. And Ellie, how many people do we know like this, by the way? How many right. gurus, rabbis, priests, self-help authors, very good at giving advice. And then you find out about their personal background, their history. It's a right. mess.
Right.
Okay. So, you know, I mean, the whole thing is rotten at the core. Okay. But I think the writer, and I don't think it was ironic. I think the writer really believes that at some degree. I think deep down they believe she's strong.
Interesting.
But I think when you apply, at least again, I don't know how the attachment people would do it or the Freudians would do it, but from a family systems perspective, this is all functional self. It's not core self. We right. actually don't even know. And what's ironic is that Alex tells Ryan on the phone when he says, how could you do this to me? She's like, what do you want? You see, you don't even know what you want. Hello? what exactly do you? Because here's the thing. Right. If Ryan would have turned it around and said, Alex, what do you want? Right. Have you told your husband that we've been sleeping together for, what, 8 months? Have you told your husband you came to a wedding with me? You came to my childhood elementary school
right.
and emotionally bonded with me? What do right. you want? And by the way, if you want your husband and your kids, this is a really weird way to go about it.
Right.
And by the way, you know, another question, Alex, if you told your husband what was going on, you know, you're a strong woman, you know, you're clear on what you want, right? Would he stay or would you lose it all? Right. Would you lose it all? So right. it's all BS. Okay. It's
yeah,
all
it's
BS.
It's interesting what you're saying too, because she's just as isolated as George Clooney.
It of
means,
course.
It means they're, you know, this idea of self-imposed isolation. If when you're in an affair and no one knows the truth about anything that you're doing, you're alone. like that actually I can only imagine would be more lonely than anything, because nobody knows what your life is about actually.
And you can see her at home, right? Telling her kids and her husband, like, anyways, guys, got to leave next week because I got to go to work. But she's probably, my hunch, and Ellie, this is just a clinical hunch. I have nothing to base this on.
Right.
I've often wondered that people who travel a lot, you know, I work with a lot of clients. Some of them are very busy professionals. They're traveling a lot. But like Freud said, sometimes a cigar is just a cigar and sometimes it's a penis. Sometimes you need to travel a lot in your workplace. But other times it's nice to get away from the family. You know, so a lot of people choose careers out of anxiety, meaning I choose a career to travel because to stay home, the tension of all that togetherness, I just don't know what to do with that. So I travel. But to say you're a hobo, right, doesn't sound great. But to say you're a traveling business consultant, it sounds so much more, you know. And I think this is true for people who work till 2 a.m. and come home at 2 and then get up in the morning, go to work at 5. And people are like, such a hard worker. Well, sure, at one level. At another level, is it that they have trouble managing the togetherness of being a parent and a spouse? So my clinical hunch here is that if you dug into Alex's past, it's a total mess, okay? And she has crafted a very well put together functional self. And so long as everything works for her, so long as Clooney doesn't show up at her door anymore and bang on there. Because by the way, if Clooney was like, what's her face in Fatal Attraction? What was her name? What was the actress? Glenn Close.
Right.
You know, let's say Clooney starts training with dead bunnies. Yeah, right. Exactly. Right. Yeah. Alex's life is going to be turned upside down very quickly. Okay. And all of a sudden, you're going to see this very composed woman completely crumble under the weight of the truth of what kind of life she's been living.
Right.
So I really wanted to, I wanted to throw this out here because it sort of burned my, when I was reading all these articles about, you know, this is what strength is. And I'm sorry, but people confuse all the time, or they don't even know the difference between solid self and functional self.
Also, like from the phone call that when she calls and says like, how dare you come to my house? You know, she's clearly freaking out. Like she's not actually comfortable with the way that things are and is working very hard to maintain the veneer of everything being exactly in its place the way that she wants it to be. So I think that's really interesting. And also I think what you were saying about people who work say from 7 a.m. till 2 a.m. and then go out again the next day. You know, it's interesting because one of the things I heard from a real estate agent who's a friend of mine is that the pandemic has been devastating for families who normally don't see each other so much.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And now that's true. They're suddenly stuck. Now they're all working at home. No one's leaving from 7 a.m. till 2 a.m. Everyone's in the same house together. And for some people, that was revolutionary in terms of creating a new type of family and relationship. And for some people, that was devastating. It just broke open all of the rifts that were already there, but were being ignored by simply never being home.
Yeah, I have to say, Ellie, every new referral I've had for 6 months, and my practice has gotten really busy. And my understanding, I was listening to the commentary podcast yesterday. They were talking about teen mental health. Because they're, you know, in the States, numbers are going back up. So the John, whatever his name is, was saying, hey,
isn't it Podborski? John?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So he was saying that, you know, he's getting very anxious because although he's vaccinated and all his kids are vaccinated, they're talking about lockdowns again in the fall. Israel yesterday said they're looking at lockdowns for Rosh Hashanah because of the numbers, and people are getting really anxious.
Yeah.
And so what John said is, he goes, you know, you have these people who are pro-lockdown saying, well, the suicide rate isn't more than this and that. And he's like, it's not just the suicide rate, you know? And he was saying that based on some of his friends in New York who are child psychiatrists, psychologists, you can't get an appointment with these people because they are packed, because it's not just suicide. It's panic attacks and anxiety attacks and depression and all this, and social anxiety and isolation. And every client that has called me over the past 6-7 months always starts when I have spaced my practice, the conversation starts with, well, being locked down with everybody is really hard. It's been really hard on us, you know, every single one, even though they're not calling me for that. Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think what you're saying is absolutely true. It touches on something we have talked about in this podcast, that human beings need both the togetherness parts of a community and a family, and we need the separateness parts to become our own people. And you can't do that when you are on top of each other physically for months right. and months. And there is going right. to be consequences to that. So the people who are pro-lockdown and only factor into illness and symptoms and don't see where this is going or choose not to, we are going to see over the next 2-3 years. I don't think we can look at today as a microcosm of what's going to happen. We don't really know how this is all going to play itself out. So we have to be a bit humble about this stuff.
Although I can say, like, with my own kids, I have 2 preteen kids or now teenage kids also. And she's been working at a camp for the last few weeks, like a day camp outdoors. And it's really the first time in almost 2 years, I guess, or a year and a half for sure, where she's been around people all day, every day. And I have to say, I definitely see a significant difference in her just overall sense of well-being. I think what you're saying is so true. Like, we're not supposed to be in extremes. Like, Ryan Bingham is the extreme of just totally being out there in the world and never being home. But the extreme of always being home also doesn't bode well. There needs to be that, like you said, a balance between being out there in the world and also being in your home. So I definitely am seeing a bit of a difference there.
Well, it's what Dr. Bowen called the two life forces. If you look at his theory, that concept of those two life forces of the baby to the breast and then the baby rejecting the breast and wanting to feed itself. Bowen said that if you don't understand those two life forces, you don't understand how human beings get stuck and psychological symptoms and all this kind of stuff. So, this goes very deep. I mean, this is sort of like evolutionary right. deep stuff. You open the door, Ellie, so I'm going to walk through it.
Okay.
Let's let's open up this is the second main point I want to talk about and perhaps the last one for this episode. You know, you were talking about George Clooney's character, Ryan, that, you know, I am what I am. I'm a traveling man. That's right. who I am. And I love it.
And I'm good.
Yeah. Right. So variations of this I hear in my practice is some version of, look, this is how our family's always done it.
Yeah.
That's what we do. You know, and by the way, insert the blank. Our family aren't criers. We don't cry. Look, it's just what we do. So can we move on? Because that's what we do. Or look, we're screamers. My dad screamed. My grandfather, we scream, you know, even physically. Look, whatever. I mean, look, everyone drops dead at 40 from a heart attack. What am I going to do? You know, so this idea that physical, emotional, there's this idea for some, not all people, by the way, but for some people is it's the Popeye. I am what I am. I'm Popeye the Sailor Man.
Right. Resigned to the status quo.
And not just, but it's not just I'm resigned. You better resign to it too, because I'm not changing. And so when I'm working with a couple or a family and I hear one person take the position of this, it's tricky because if they feel me coming on too strong and challenging them, they're going to get defensive because that's all they know. So I have to find ways, little openings of asking, trying to be curious about some version of, and how's that working for you? Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's tricky because
coaching has the same approach, because the moment you feel that wall go up, then you have to go, okay, how can we get everybody into like a more curious space? So I love what you're saying. It's such an interesting phenomena.
It's tricky. And by the way, I completely understand it, right? I mean, if you grew up in a family and for generations, your family has managed trauma in a certain way, and now I'm asking you to try it differently. It's like, you know, you don't have to live my life, therapist. Right. Like, you don't have to.
What do you mean you're asking me to move?
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, but here's the thing, though. Okay. So Clooney positions himself this way. I am what I am. Right. And I was, you know, some questions, Ellie, I thought I would throw it here and we can discuss this, you know, because this ties into this, the issue of affairs and you know, solid self versus functional self. You know, is George Clooney the traveling man because he has cultivated a sense of adventure, right? On principle, you know, no kids, no marriage, not a lot of luggage, on principle. Because I think there's an argument to be made for that. Mm-hmm. I do. I have met people who adopt a, what do you call that? A minimalist
yeah.
sort of a lifestyle.
Right.
And they've come to it by sometimes it's because they've had too much possessions or they're trying mm-hmm. to rework something from their family of origin. But I know people like that. The question right. Is George Clooney that kind of person? Now, I'm going to throw an idea, and Ellie, let's open this up. I think that if you ever want to know what makes someone tick, or if you ever really want to understand something, go to the family, not the person. Observe the family. So what do we know about George Clooney's family, Ryan's family? Well, we know that he has been emotionally distant or isolated from his siblings for enough time that when his sister is getting married, her best man is, who is it?
The person walking her down the aisle.
Is who?
Is the uncle of her fiance, I think.
Right. And right. When Ryan tells her sister, look, you know, dad's not here, I'll walk you down. And she's like, oh, actually, no, we, and you can see he's a bit hurt by that. But her, his older sister says, you know, where have you been?
Right.
You haven't been part of this family.
Right.
So I would argue that that is the detail that suggests that Ryan has been doing this for a long, long time. He has been distancing himself from people he's closest to because of anxiety, not because of principle, but because he's a smart, creative guy. He can package it just like who? Alex.
Right.
And that's what Dr. Bowen said. Snarch and Bowen.
Right.
We meet people at similar levels of emotional maturity in our relationships. And people always, when I give talks about this, they look at me like, no, because when I think about my spouse, we're so different. It's not about your hobbies and your vocations and right. your personalities. It's about how you respond to anxiety. Alex and Ryan are very similar
for sure.
in how they manage their relationships.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm curious to hear what you have to say, because what did you think of Ryan's character and his transformation, Ellie? Because you touched on it before.
So I think for me, it was so interesting, all the different elements that were needed to catalyze his transformation. Like one was the thought of not traveling anymore that was potentially coming from his work. And the level of anxiety that he was starting to have around that idea, I think points to what you're saying, that it wasn't based on a value or a principle or, you know, a choice so much to always be on the road because he loves it, because the prospect of that being taken away was making him like deeply anxious and like, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? To the point where he fights so much against it that he ends up having to take this young executive out on the road with him. And he really eviscerates her in front of their boss. So I think that speaks volumes. But, you know, the beauty of the young girl being the person that accompanies him suddenly on the road and him seeing his job through her eyes and her kind of raw heart, in a way, like, I think that affects him. And then the perfect storm also of then his younger sister's wedding coming and him having to convince his younger sister's fiance to go through with the wedding. You know, that's one of those like pivotal moments where he has to somehow stand up for why it might be good to have a relationship with somebody, you know, which is where they come out with that great line, like, you know, it's nice to have a co-pilot, right? It's so I think each of these things starts to chip away at this structure he's built for himself, which is I'm fine, I don't need anyone, it's better if my backpack is empty, you know, and he's, like you said, built this narrative around I'm gonna cope with not knowing how to be with people by just not being with people.
Yeah. And, you know, Ellie, something else that you just reminded me of, when he's on the stage in Las Vegas, getting the best gig he can ever find to speak about his backpack.
Right.
And of course, he can't go through with it because he is now enlightened. His eyes are open and he can't BS himself anymore.
Right.
Right? It reminded me of our podcast. And I'll tell you why. Mm-hmm. Every week, most weeks, you and I prepare for this podcast, and every mm-hmm. week I have to think of certain themes to talk about. And every week I have to look at myself and think,
yeah,
I'm going to pontificate about things that I am dropping the ball with all over the place in my life. And it really is,
yes,
it really, it's a sense of tension I don't like, but the podcast has been very helpful to me because I do try. I fail more than I succeed, but I at least try to, when I plan for this podcast, to not shovel crap at you and the people who listen in ways that I don't do with a certain amount of integrity in my personal life. But it's challenging because I'm just a human being too. And so I find that this podcast.
And we're both parents and we're both, we're in the trenches. So
I have allergies to too much closeness. I mean, I am more like Ryan than I am to Natalie, for example. I often find it interesting that my subspecialty is family therapy and marriage, but I am, I am at my best, I am my least anxious when I'm alone sketching on a beach somewhere.
Right.
You know, if you tell me there's a family get together happening, I'm like, ugh! So I was thinking about, how these crucible moments lead to growth. And, in a small way, this podcast is a crucible every week for me to try to find ways of talking about these things that don't, so I don't feel I end the podcast feeling like a total hypocrite.
Right.
Yeah. And so anyway, I just wanted to point that out there that.
Yeah. For me too, it's been like a real anchor throughout all of the pandemic and really a way to continuously self-reflect on the ideas that we're talking about and am I applying them and what's truthful for me in my own practice and with my kids. So I agree with you on that. I think it's been really, a really good anchor in that way. Hopefully people listen, feel that way as well.
Well, I think that, when people who are listening to this are asking themselves, okay, so that's interesting. So how does one develop more of a core self versus a functional self? I mean, there's a lot of ways to do it. One thing I've heard, and you can change this for everyone. I heard this from someone, Dr. Bowen would have his psychiatry residents when they were training in systems theory, he would have them take their top three axiomatic beliefs or values. And what he would say to them is, I want you to write a composition on each of those things about the foundational parts. Where did you learn that thing? So let's take, I believe in God. Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Where did you first learn about God? Have you challenged your belief in God? How much is your belief in God yours? And how much is your belief in God your grandfather's? And he would push people and put until they were like pretty rattled by the experience.
Right.
His point was that you can't be an effective a coach, therapist, if your own core self is functional and not well thought out. And so this podcast has been very helpful to me. I have clinical supervision. That's helpful for me too. But I think the idea that we could just do this alone, journaling and, in a room, in a cottage up north, I don't think it works that way. I think you have to put some skin in the game. And this podcast for me is putting skin in the game. And I think for George Clooney, the character, his Ryan character, putting skin in the game was leaving mid sentence, knowing that that's it. He ain't being asked to do these talks anymore.
Yeah.
And taking a risk and going to Chicago and knocking on Alex's door. And though it didn't work out, the way life works sometimes is you can't always get what you want, but if you try sometimes, you get what you need. And
in the words of that famous,
in the words of Mick Jagger. So I think that, it ends quite beautifully because of course it's funny. All the characters get what they need except for one character, Alex.
Yeah.
She's the only one that is still stuck in a lie.
Yeah.
A complete lie.
Yeah.
So anyways,
very interesting.
Those are my thoughts about the film.
Yeah. I think it's so important what you're saying. And I think as parents, to bring it back to the parenting piece, this is so important what you're saying about pushing back on what you think are your core beliefs and your core principles. And, just recently, this week we're starting in the Parsha, Devarim, which is really the second covenant with the Jewish people. And it's updated for where those people are now as they're about to go into the land. And so one of the questions we were talking about in one of my classes is, what are your covenants? What are the things that you build your life around? What are your laws? What are your covenants? And when's the last time you updated them? When's the last time you looked at the structures that you put in your life? And I think as often as parents, one of the things that we don't do is the covenants and laws that we put into place in terms of here's how our family works. This is how I parent. This is what my kids are up to. They get established very early in that relationship. And then we forget to update them. And suddenly we have teens, suddenly we have young professionals, and we're trying to apply the same covenant and rules to our parenting as we did when they were six and can't understand why things aren't working. And so I think, you know, this idea of what you're saying, where Ryan had to update his covenant, Natalie had to update her covenant. They each had to look at the laws and scaffolding they put in place and say, does this really still fit? And that's why he had to walk off the stage and not give his talk about your backpack, because suddenly he realized it actually wasn't his covenant anymore. So I think it's really interesting as parents to try to figure out how to do that.
As we say in our tradition, Yasher Koach. That was a nice drush, Ellie, at the end of, you found a way to stick some of that sprinkle of Judaism.
Well, I just talked about it yesterday. So it kind of like threw me into that, you know, and what you were saying, where Bowen would push back on people, like, where does that come from? Like, how current is that belief? And is that really what you think? Or is that something you took on from someone else and just adopted as your own? So I think it's such a powerful question to ask. So that's okay. What made me think about.
Well, there you go. There is up in the air.
Awesome. Thank you so much. This is it was really fun. It was fun to reflect a bit on the podcast also. So thank you everyone for joining us. Please remember to share, subscribe, and let us know what you think. And if you have a movie suggestion, please let us know. As you can see, we're trying to figure it out, so we could use your help if you have something you think that we should watch between the years of 2000 and 2010. All right.
I'll see you next time.
Excellent. Okay, bye-bye.